Now, the voices of Bronco Athletics, Bob Beeler and Chris Lewis on Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket.
Welcome to a Monday edition of Idaho Sports Talk. Bob and Chris here. I'll be scooting out to San Diego to get ready for Boise State and San Diego State coming up tomorrow night. And Chris, I guess the first local question is that the FBI probe story kind of involves San Diego State and the Mountain West, with Malik Pope being held out by San Diego State in the game against San Jose State. He was one of a couple that were held out over the weekend, the other one at the University of Texas. Everybody else seemed to be cleared and put into play. We don't know at this stage whether Pope's going to play on Tuesday night. I don't know why, Chris, but I have a gut feeling he will be cleared and will play by then.
And why do you have that gut feeling?
Just because everybody else has been cleared.
That's exactly what I mean,
and his number was lower. He was 1,400. He was one of the paupers on the list. I think what San Diego State, and this is, I have not talked to anybody at San Diego State, but my guess is that they looked at this situation and figured, you know what, we can beat San Jose State in our sleep on Saturday. Why don't we hold him out, and then we'll just see how the dust kind of settles over the weekend and then make a decision. That's what I kind of think happened.
Yeah, I think they just looked to the left and looked to their right and said, oh, you're not moving? Or you're not going forward? You're not moving? I'll stay here if you stay here. And I think they just took the temperature of the room and they saw that, okay, most of these other schools' compliance departments ruled that, all right, there might not be enough to suspend these guys immediately. So if there's not enough for Michigan State to take out Bridges and there's not enough for Arizona to take out Ayton, why should we take out Pope? And, you know, Texas, I don't know what they're going to do with the player that they had named in this, but I think it was sort of what I anticipated on Friday, and the fact that, what, I don't think, you know, Kentucky also had Kevin Knox involved in this, and he's also another really good player, plays for Kentucky. Duke, Wendell Carter, who I watched the Syracuse versus Duke game over the weekend. I really wish that Duke held out Wendell Carter, because he really affected Syracuse and their ability to do anything on offense, because Wendell Carter kept getting in the way and blocking their shots. So the point is, you're not going to take out the top 5 to 10% of college basketball players, and a good number of them are involved in this. And you're not going to, also from the team standpoint, you're not going to, at this point, if you're the NCAA, ban the top teams from competing in the NCAA tournament, or else you're going to watch Boise State become a 4 seed. And that's not what the NCAA tournament wants. So at this point, you're just almost, you got to have to keep the status quo, at least for a little bit.
Talking about the FBI probe, and Chris, I very rarely can say this in my life. I've read more things this weekend, tried to read as much as I can, and I have left with more questions than when I've started this thing.
All right, what are your questions?
How does the NCAA clear these people so quickly? Normally, the NCAA moves very, very slowly on a whole bunch of things. How do you think that Sean Miller may have offered $100,000 to DeAndre Ayton, and they clear him quickly saying he didn't take it? The Arizona moves to withhold Sean Miller from the game, but yet I don't see them placing him on administrative leave. They're not setting it up to fire him, at least right now, like Colorado State is with Larry Eustace. I know that's a whole different can of worms.
It seemed like their statement was more of, you're too hot right now.
Right.
We can't have you around just because you're hotter than a pistol, and we need to keep you, we need to keep you away.
Right. But he's saying that I'm going to be vindicated. Now, if I knew that I had said to somebody that I'm going to give your guy or this guy $100,000, and I knew that I had said it where it could be recorded, I don't think I'd be claiming that I'm going to be vindicated, because things have a way of coming out. Now, the interesting thing, at least as I read it, nobody's heard this wiretap because only the defendants supposedly can hear it. So the reporters that are claiming this on that it's on there, from what I can tell, are going on the faith of somebody that's actually listened to it.
Yeah, and even that has become a little bit under scrutiny. I thought ESPN today had a correction to their initial story of the year that this conversation reportedly took place, that it was in 2016 and not in a different year that was initially reported in the story. So, like, there are some holes coming out, I suppose, but like, I don't know what to do with those holes. So what, I'm supposed to believe that Sean Miller wasn't on the phone talking about $100,000 and DeAndre Ayton when, you know, if there was a tape, the year that the conversation took place is almost irrelevant to the discussion. if he was on there talking about 100,000, and how could that be misconstrued? It's either he's there or he's not, or somebody's lying about it. But the leak for the FBI, what would they have to gain by lying about something like this? So there, I guess for your questions that you pose, I have like three more questions.
Exactly. And then the other questions that I look at when you talk about the ledger that shows the money that was allegedly loaned or given or paid, however you want to describe it, to all these college athletes, I find it hard to believe that all of them didn't take it. All of them didn't get the money. Doesn't that seem kind of odd to you that this one's cleared, that one's cleared? They said they believed the parents, they didn't take the money. Now, my question would be, where did the money go?
Yeah, is it in general the thing for them to be cleared? Are they saying that they didn't take the money? Or are they saying that there's not enough at this point to say that they did take the money?
Like, I think it may be the latter. I think it has to be the latter, because how do you know?
Yeah.
And what if it comes out later that, you know, through bank records or through a canceled check or something, that it would show up? I would guess that what they mean by clear, at least this is what I would take it as, that the NCAA says you've done your due diligence enough to allow this guy to play.
Yeah, you've talked to him, and he said, I don't really want to talk about it. Like, what else could it be? Like, to be cleared in a 24-hour span, of which a lot of these guys are, you didn't launch an investigation. You probably just talked to the player and said, hey, what's going on? You may have to talk to my lawyer, because a lot of these families have now gotten legal teams involved, because you're talking FBI and you're talking possible jail time with some of this stuff, because apparently breaking NCAA rules is breaking the law, because the NCAA gets some federal stuff involved, which makes their rules law, which I still hate. I don't think that makes any sense, that, you know, they're not necessarily these families and these players. Like, taking money isn't breaking the law, but if
it is
breaking,
if you don't report it.
But if it's breaking the NCAA rule, then, you know, that's why the FBI is looking into it. It is really confusing. But on that note, yeah, I don't think you can, in a 24-hour span, know definitively that they didn't take it. At most, they could say, I'm not going to comment on this. And based on just this one report that came out from, what was it, ESPN? I forgot who initially had the report. Now,
Yahoo had part of it, and ESPN had the Sean Miller one.
Okay, so based on those two reports, we can't make that gospel and say, okay, this is definitive fact. And if we can't prove it on a 100% basis, then you're going to be cleared. At least that's what I think the approach is from a lot of these compliance departments. Because any other way you look at it, it wouldn't make any sense for them to be playing.
Coach Rice met the media a few hours ago, and of course this came up as a topic at the little impromptu press conference, and Coach Rice talked about, from his perspective, what he thinks needs to happen.
The most important thing, I mean, why do we have rules that some of us are going to really try to follow to the T, and then others play by different rules? It's not right. And, you know, I think that there's a lot of coaches that feel that way, and, you know, so that's great. Let's make sure we're all on the same page and all playing by the same rules, and that'll make it a lot better.
So I think the big question is where we go from here. If, let's say, Sean Miller is on that tape and does talk about $100,000, is he fired? Will he never coach again? Is the NCAA going to change things to funnel money legally, according to their bylaws, to players who are obviously in a hot commodity for the shoe companies, for the agents, for people moving forward? I mean, until the Sean Miller coaching bombshell was dropped that he may have offered $100,000, it looked to me like it was all shoe companies and agents who were looking to position themselves for down the road. This was really the first chink in the armor, as far as it looked like somebody was trying to cheat.
Yeah, that's the thing. I had two things off of the Coach Rice comments. One of them, like, we're all playing, we want to all play by the same rules. Well, yeah, before the Sean Miller part of this, could we definitively say the schools were breaking any of these rules? I mean,
no.
These were mostly agents and the shoe companies, and I don't know, as a school, are you obliged to know about what the player took or didn't take? Like, do you have to know that?
Well, you probably want to.
You
or
want
should
to,
know, but,
like,
I, but it, I can it, see where if Malik Pope got $1,400, let's say that's true. $1,400 is such a low amount of money. I don't think his lifestyle would change that much. It's not like if I was watching him. Now, if he got $75,000, like, you know, or $100,000 that Aiden was alleged to, and all of a sudden he shows up driving a Lamborghini, you might think that, whoa, there's something going on here. But for somebody to have been loaned $1,400 or taken out on a few meals or whatever it is, there's no way you could know that. Yeah. I mean, if they didn't want to tell you.
So, yeah, unless they walked into your office and said, hey, I had dinner with this agent. Like, that's not – is it the school's responsibility to ask? And if the player didn't tell the truth, then, like, what are you supposed to do? So, like, that's the whole thing of playing by the same rules from the school's department. I don't really know definitively if you could say there's a bunch of schools that are breaking – now – you can also be real about this and say maybe they all know about it. But from just the evidence that we have in front of us, there's really nothing definitive that says the schools, other than Arizona, with Coach Sean Miller on the phone talking about $100,000.
Allegedly talking about it.
Unless that didn't happen. So that's at least what we have to go on by that ESPN report that we saw over the weekend. And then the number two thing, and again, mentioned following rules. I think at one point you have to say, well, it doesn't seem like a lot of these potential student athletes or their families are following the rules. If anybody's breaking rules, it's them for taking the money, or the people who are offering money to them are breaking the rules. But like, there is something to be said for, what if the rules aren't right? And at a certain point, I don't blame people for breaking rules that aren't right. And if they are morally against those rules about, you know, being able to profit off of your own hard work, your own likeness, your own name, your own image, and if you fundamentally believe that it isn't right for you to not be able to profit off of that, just like plenty of other examples in history, and again, maybe the stakes significantly lower of all these different events in history that I can point out of rules being unfair to certain groups of people and people breaking those rules in the spirit of, yeah, this isn't right for this rule to be in place in the first place. I can't really blame somebody for breaking a rule that they fundamentally don't agree with.
I agree with you, but I'm going to go a little bit further. If there are rules in place and you fundamentally disagree with them and you try to break them, if for some reason you're caught, you have to pay the consequences for what the rule was about.
To do it. And they didn't think that the FBI was part of the, like, going to jail would be part of the consequences. That wasn't entering their mind, breaking these rules. They're like, all right, rule me ineligible if I'm DeAndre Ayton. All right, take me out of Arizona. I'm still a number one pick or number two pick.
Right. But I think what we're talking about the rules is we're talking the schools and how they compete with one another. I don't think you can stop the shoe companies. I don't think you can stop the agents. But if you have coaches involved in this where they're actually giving money and funneling money to people, that's to me where I think the rules are coming in, because now somebody is getting an advantage from one school over another school.
Yeah, and that's not right. You shouldn't be able to have that advantage based on the schools. But I don't, again, other than Arizona, allegedly, this case has nothing to do with schools paying people. Maybe they know about it, maybe they don't, although there's nothing definitive other than Arizona to point to that they knew about these things. So that's not what we're talking about. That's a separate issue.
More to come, I'm sure, on this as other things get leaked and get vetted out. Up next, with a week to go in the Mountain West season, why does Boise State have the toughest draw imaginable? That's next on Sports Radio The Ticket. Welcome back to Idaho Sports Talk with Bob and Chris. 1 week to go in the Mountain West season, and Boise State, not playing this weekend, has locked themselves in as the number two seed. With Nevada's win, they clinched the one, and with Fresno State's loss to Wyoming at home on Saturday, Boise State cannot go lower than the two. So, Chris, we know Boise State is now going to be playing the first game in the evening session. That'll be 6 Pacific, 7 Mountain Time, coming up on Thursday. What we don't know are seeds 3-9, because Colorado State at 10 and San Jose State at 11 have been locked into the bottom part of the grid, and those teams will play in games on Wednesday. But right now, if we're to end the season and not play the games that are supposed to be played this week, Boise State, in my opinion, has about as bad a draw as you can get, opening most likely with UNLV on Thursday. They would have to beat a Colorado State team that's probably just looking forward to ending the season and heading to spring break. And then if you get by UNLV on their home floor, you'd face a Fresno State team right now that's sitting in the three seed spot, assuming they would get past San Diego State or San Jose State in their quarterfinal match. And even if San Diego beats Fresno, no walk in the park. I think you're looking at three of the most athletic teams that Boise State may have trouble matching up with as compared to some of the teams on the other side of the draw.
So this is an uh-oh scenario. They're in the number two spot, which isn't bad, and they've been in this number two position before. but you just don't like the teams that are on their side of the bracket. And we've been consistent with this. Like, this is something that we've been, you know, saying throughout, of teams that we want on the Boise State side and teams that we'd rather have on the other side of the bracket from the Broncos. And the way it sits right now, and again, some things can change as you brought it up, but maybe this is the more difficult bracket. So I thought it'd be kind of fun to just play it out in terms of, all right, we're going to be in Vegas for the Mountain West Tournament coming up, the Hard Rock Hotel in Vegas, to be able to take in all of this, and it'll be fun. But like, let's kind of go through it. Like, you with an NCAA tournament bracket, you pick the 1 versus the 16, you kind of go through it, highlight the matchups. We could do that for the Mountain West tournament too.
All right, let's go with the Wednesday games. Right now, the 8-9 is going to be Utah State taking on Air Force. Air Force just won a game over Utah State at Air Force over the weekend. I would have said Utah State would win this game. I think Utah State has more talent on the floor. The game was not would not be played in Colorado Springs. I kind of, in pencil, would give the nod to Utah State. Agree?
Yeah, I'll give it to Utah State as well. They played a couple of their better games this season against Boise State. At least I think we've seen the better Aggies. They're a little bit more up and down than what they performed against the Broncos. Air Force just really wasn't impressive the last I saw them when they took on Boise State. So, again, it's dangerous to just base it off of the one opponent that, you know, the one time that they faced the Broncos, but it seemed like Utah State is in a different tier.
And you're going to allow me to just be a given UNLV over Colorado State and San Diego State over San Jose without any discussion?
Yeah, no questions.
All right, so now we get to Thursday, quarterfinal round. Nevada would be taking on Utah State. Utah State would have played a game the day before, maybe get the jitters out. I don't think Nevada has any trouble with either Utah State or Colorado State. I think if Nevada's going to get beat, it's going to be further along. It will not be on Thursday's game at noon.
Nevada didn't look great, though, against Colorado State over the weekend. They just sleptwalked. Like, you know, they're like, all right, we saw what the Rams did against the Broncos. They didn't perform well, so maybe we barely have to show up. And I didn't think they looked great. Now, that's not going to make me pick Utah State against them, but yeah, I would like to see them, if you're, you know, Coach Musselman and they're still working through the injury to their starting point guard, you do want them to look a little bit better the last week of the year before you start making any big declarations of them easily reaching the championship.
New Mexico would face Wyoming in the 4-5 game. That's the rematch of this past midweek's game where New Mexico went to Laramie and won the game 119-114. I would guarantee you that'll be a much lower scoring game in the tournament. Most tournament games are lower scoring. I think I like New Mexico in that game. I think they have a few more folks than Wyoming. I think Wyoming's got maybe two of the best players that'll be on the floor that night, but I think New Mexico a little deeper. I think New Mexico will get that done.
Isn't this the ultimate home court advantage matchup? Like, these two teams are just completely different when they play in their building. Although Wyoming, what they did to be able to beat Fresno State in the way they did on the road, which just really confused me. I'm like, wait a minute. Fresno State, you're one of the hotter teams in the league. You have a home game. Listen, isn't your senior night too? Like, you have a lot of reasons why you should be performing well in that game. And then Wyoming goes into your building and beats you. I could see if Wyoming was home. And then New Mexico's the same thing. At the Pit, they're pretty good, as Boise State saw. It needed a miracle to win it. When they're on the road, they've been bad. So I don't know where to go. I'm going to defer to you. And if you think that New Mexico is better on this, I won't disagree with you. But they're both one of those teams where they're different to me at home than they are on the road. So this being a neutral site game, I don't know what to expect.
Moving to the evening matchup, Boise State is the 2. UNLV is the 7. UNLV having to get by Colorado State. Boise State's beaten UNLV twice. The first one in Las Vegas was pretty easy. The second one went to overtime in Boise. I think the Broncos get it done over UNLV, but I think they have to spend an awful lot of energy to get to the semifinals.
You're playing what is, in effect, a road game, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you're playing at the Thomas and Mack Center against UNLV. Have they had this situation arise for them before?
For Boise State?
Yeah.
No, they have not played UNLV down there.
Okay, so UNLV hasn't exactly performed well at the Mountain West tournament, with them always being at home, at least since the thing has been in Vegas. So
since Boise State has been in the league.
Yeah. Well, yeah, UNLV, I'm saying, even if they haven't been facing Boise State,
right,
it's not like their
they have not
games
won
against other teams have been really
correct,
good.
Correct.
They haven't been a good squad in this quote-unquote home setting for the Mountain West tournament. So with that in mind, though, I'd be nervous. Like, I think crowd could make a difference. Like, if Boise State fans could get there and at least take up some of the – make it not feel like a true road game, I think that's big. And as for a 2-7, this is not what you want.
No, this is not the easy. Normally 2-7 you think is going to be pretty easy. But the difference between 3-7 not much at all. My question is going to be, how much will the UNLV fans, if they get by Colorado State, think they got a shot at this game? Because just because the game's in Vegas, it's not part of their season ticket package. They might not show up because they may think this season hasn't been that good.
Yeah, it's one thing. It seems like New Mexico fans, when I'm being there, and San Diego State fans, when they are good, they take up a, Wyoming too. They take up a lot more of the seats, and their atmosphere is a lot more in their favor when those three teams are playing than when I've ever gotten when UNLV has been there playing a game.
Bob and Chris, Idaho Sports Talk, discussing what might happen in the Mountain West, looking at the seeds and the tournament as it would sit today with two left. Fresno State right now sitting at three. They would take on the six, San Diego State. I wouldn't be surprised if San Diego State uses their San Jose State tune-up and gets right by Fresno State. Would you?
It feels like a lot of it will come down to Malik Pope, right?
Right.
He's kind of that important of a player. Like, I can't just envision them being the same. He's, you know, had to lived up exactly to the one and done reputation that he had coming in, but he's still a very solid player. And if he's back for that game, if the compliance department says he's good to go and they perform pretty well against Boise State, I would be willing to say, especially, in the way that Fresno State looked in their most recent game, a loss at home. I know they were hot before that. I'd say San Diego State, familiar stage, they would get that done. I picked the Aztecs too.
So then we get to the semifinals. It would be Nevada against New Mexico and Boise State against San Diego State. You would think on paper, Nevada. But I have a gut feeling. They're in the tournament already. I don't think they're going to be playing with the sense of urgency that the other teams are going to play. They have a safety net. And you can even make a case that if they were to lose, maybe even the first day that they play, that the rest could do them better good for the next week's NCAA tournament than if they spent all the capital, played three games, three tough games, and cut down the nets. I'm not saying you forfeit, but I'm saying that if I lost in the quarters of the semis, I wouldn't be that disappointed. If I lost in the finals and I'm having to stay there and play on a Saturday, three games in 3 days, I want to win the thing. Mm-hmm. But if I lost either the first time I went out or the second time I went out, I wouldn't be that disappointed.
And the desperation is not at the level for the other 10 teams in the league who need to win this thing to move on to the NCAA tournament. I see that argument. And like, part of me does want to see how Nevada plays the last week of the year, but the other part says, I mean, they're really good. Like, you know, Nevada's, their switchability, their ability to hit contested shots. Like, I feel like their style of play works in a tournament setting too. So I'm going to pick Nevada to go to the championship.
And then you've got Boise State against San Diego State in this exercise. I think Boise State beats San Diego State and gets to the final, but I'll let you know a little more when I talk to you on Wednesday.
Exactly. You got to have a lot. I'm going to pick it because why not? Let's just play out Boise State going to the championship game. But, you know, San Diego State has had Boise State's number in this setting. Well, they've been eliminated three different times by SDSU in the Mountain West tournament, so it's not been good, at least history-wise.
I'm going to give you something here on this exercise. I have greater confidence in Boise State winning the championship game against either Nevada or New Mexico than I do beating Fresno or San Diego.
Why?
In the semis. I don't know. I just think the due theory. I think Boise State is due to hit some threes against Nevada. I think things will change just enough. And then I think Boise State's better than New Mexico. I think Boise State would beat New Mexico in a championship game.
Okay, so if they got there, they cut down the net.
Yes, they do.
They take the Coach Gordy Presnell route of, if you get to the championship game, you win the championship and you cut down the net.
Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that Boise State doesn't – Nevada's good. I think Nevada is significantly the best. And to say that if Boise State were to face Nevada the third time, they suddenly like hit better threes and more threes, I don't see that. Nevada, there's a reason they're one of the best in the country at opponents' three-point percentage. They're long. You don't get many looks. They switch, so your screens that you set off the ball to pry shooters loose don't work as well. So I'm not willing to say automatically that Boise State would have a much better chance of meeting number three against Nevada. That depends if Drew is really hurt and
if that really significantly hurts
them from they're not able to do the same things that they were before. That would be the reason why I'd pick Boise State. If I see that, oh, wow, Nevada is really hurting without their guard.
We'll be down there for Idaho Sports Talk at the Mountain West Tournament. We'll be at the Hard Rock in Vegas. You should come, too. Follow the Broncos men's and women's teams. Enjoy live radio shows Wednesday through Friday. Stay with teams and fans at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino. You can book your room at KTIK.com for a special package rate and attend Idaho Sports Talk Thursday to win a 3-day, 2-night stay. King Berrios and Bow Investment Group will present Caves Prater, Chris and myself live from the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Vegas, March 7th to 10th. Travel with the ticket. Up next in the sports update is Tim Tebow, the next Mickey Mantle. That's next on Sports Radio, The Ticket.
Ticket Sports Update is sponsored by Spectrum Productions. Feed your passion for hunting and fishing in Idaho's great outdoors. The Idaho Sportsman Show, March 1st through the 4th at Expo Idaho. Don't miss it. Well, start with a quick little Boise State programming update. Note, Boise State and Learfield have extended their contract through 2025, meaning football and men's and women's basketball continue to remain right here on Sports Radio, The Ticket, and KBOI. So you do not need to change the dial when it comes to men's basketball, women's basketball, or Boise State football for the next 7 years, Chris.
Sounds good to me. I got in the habit of, you know, saying the games are on 1350 a.m., The Ticket, so.
It'd be kind of weird to change now.
Yeah, I'm in the habit. I don't want to break the habit, so. Hey, good news. By the way, Bob, with this whole Learfield thing, you know, they pay for him to go to these games and go to nice places like San Diego in late February. So he's gone now. He went to San Diego.
That must suck to leave all this nice
exactly.
Snow and cold weather for San Diego.
I don't know. Like, why do they pay him to do this? Like, as if somebody wouldn't do this for free. Oh, wait, I shouldn't say that out loud because that's kind of what I do sometimes for women's basketball, and I do like to be paid.
Yeah, you probably should keep that on the down low, Chris. We like people to be paid. Well, Chris, we talked last week about hype and how much it's worth, and Wyoming just lost their most hyped player to the NFL draft, Josh Allen. But they might have reloaded in hype over the weekend. They got a commitment from Rahig Ishmael Jr. Now, if that name doesn't sound familiar, what if I said Rocket Ishmael?
That's familiar.
The Notre Dame
dude, yeah, Cowboys.
That would be his
for.
Son.
Yeah.
He has committed to Wyoming. His son had committed to TCU. He decided to go to Cisco Junior College for 2 years, and now apparently is playing for Wyoming.
He had another son who played for Syracuse, actually, a couple of years ago.
I remember that. His name wasn't his. I think I read his nickname was the Missile.
Yeah.
Apparently this kid's name is the Rocket still. He didn't get a good off-brand nickname.
Well, imagine if the Rocket played with the Wonder Child, or the young Rocket, the little Rocket. This Rocket played with Josh Allen.
Yeah, Josh Allen's probably kicking himself now. He's like, now you reload on talent?
Exactly. I mean,
if he
would have maybe completed 56% of his passes instead of 55% of his passes.
I mean, what? Maybe once a drive, you say, all right, hey, go run a 9. Just run a go. Josh Allen will get you the ball. You just need to make sure you have at least, what, half your father's speed?
In a way, it like, probably would have hurt his draft stock because you couldn't use the whole argument of, oh, he doesn't have any talent around him. If he had talent around him, that excuse doesn't hold up now, does it?
No, it doesn't. So maybe it was a good thing he left, but we'll have to see how the hype goes there. Well, speaking of talent, people may argue that Tim Tebow doesn't have any when it comes to baseball or football, for that matter. However, he does have one thing in common with a New York Yankee great, Mickey Mantle. That is an inability to watch where he's running on the baseball field. Tebow is currently nursing a sore ankle after he sprained it on a sprinkler head.
Oh, that sprinkler head is now cursed. Because Lord Tebow, if he got hurt...
That sprinkler head will never work again.
Exactly. It can't work. You need to replace it. You cannot injure Lord Tebow.
From what I can tell, he has not appeared in a single game so far this spring training.
They haven't played that
they
many,
They played
though.
Three games.
That's because he hurt himself. Now, at least he didn't go out like the Phillies prospect who broke his leg in like the first game. Colliding in the outfield, yeah.
Wow. Well, Lord Tebow's leg would have been fine. The other dude's leg probably would have been broken.
Yeah, how come, like, you know, when somebody else gets hurt, Tebow can just touch their leg and it heals? Why can't Tebow just touch his own ankle and it heals?
Well, like, Mickey Mantle broke his ankle. Tebow only sprained it.
Well, if Tebow was there when Mickey Mantle broke his ankle, Tebow could have touched it and healed it right away.
You've gone too far on this, Lord. Speaking of which, I just want to give a shout-out. Bob always talks about his Giants. My Marlins are currently beating the world champions right now. It's 4-0 Marlins over the Astros. I don't care that it's spring training.
How many regulars are in the lineup? Like all of them for the Marlins?
I believe
because
last time
all
we looked,
them are spring
we looked,
training caliber guys?
If we looked on Friday, I could name one guy. I had heard of one guy on the Marlins roster who was playing in the game.
Yeah, that's your team, though. Like, your whole team is probably determined by your spring training performance. Meanwhile, the teams like the Astros have most of their roster set.
Yeah, our backups are
doing.
Better than their backups. Their backups just never play.
Fair.
Well, speaking of spring training, Shohei Ohtani made his debut over the weekend and did not get off on the right foot. He lasted only 1 1/3 innings. He threw 31 pitches, only 17 for strikes, gave up 2 runs, including a leadoff home run in the second. No word on when he'll hit. However, the Angels have said will not be on days before or after he pitches.
So they're putting the rules in place right now.
At least for spring training.
The spring training rules. Yeah, people say it didn't look exceptional for sure. Now, of course, he's judged with a little bit more of a microscope because this is his sample size versus other guys we have regular season sample size to judge with. So, yeah, his hype and how he performs will be scrutinized, analyzed for much more intently than what you probably should take for spring training. I'm not going to freak out if he doesn't look great. A lot of pitchers are working their way up until what they want to be in April.
And then one final spring training. Bob left on the wrong day. This is the baseball-heavy update, and he's in San Diego. But one more spring training note. The MLB free agent camp still playing, despite the fact of some late sightings. And there's enough players on the team to have a couple games this week, as it was announced today that the MLB free agent team will be playing a Japanese amateur team, JR East, twice later this week. Those games will be at the IMG Academy, open to the media and scouts, though not available to the public.
I mean, good for them to be able to get some work, right?
Yeah.
Everybody needs some competition to be able to sharpen up their skills. It's like when some of these teams face the colleges that come on down in that Florida area. Now, I always wonder, how the college teams stack up from a talent standpoint, because you see every year a team, MLB team, loses, and you're like, wait a minute, they shouldn't be losing to Florida if you're a Major League Baseball team. But you wonder how, your prospects compare to upper echelon or lower tier, no matter what college you're facing, how your lower end of your roster is supposed to do against them. Now, for the free agents, they better not lose. They're looking for work. It's one thing when you're on a roster and you're just trying to, sharpen up your skills or, get to your spot before you go to Double A. Another thing when your paycheck's on the line.
Yeah, you need to get some work.
You better perform well.
This is the one
high stakes.
Jake Arrieta can't give up 5 runs to some Japanese amateur players.
That would be a bad look.
Well, we finally know what the Kansas City Chiefs received in exchange for Marcus Peters. It came out today that the Chiefs will receive the Rams' 4th-round pick this year and 2nd-round pick next year. And in addition to Peters, the Chiefs will send the Rams their 6th-round pick in 2018. So a 4th and a future 2nd for a guy who has more interceptions than anyone since he entered the league.
This is definitely one that makes you rub your chin a little bit. Like, what's going on here? What is the deal? Guy who's, by all accounts, one of the top-end corners in the NFL. Now, I know he has gotten in trouble, and that's the one thing about this. At Washington and then one game with the Kansas City Chiefs, they decided to bench him because of an attitude issue. So is his attitude really that bad that his trade value has gone down to, you're basically getting one additional draft pick?
Yeah.
I mean, you're getting two, but you're giving away one along with Marcus Peters. That doesn't seem like you're getting the best end of the deal for one of the best corners in football. But again, his contract will come up soon, so you're going to have to pay him. And if you believe that him with more money is not something that will be beneficial to a franchise, then I can see the decision. It's just, there's not many corners that are better than him. So if his market is one additional draft pick, it kind of seems weak.
And then finally, speaking of the NFL and people getting paid, the Jacksonville Jaguars have found their quarterback of the future, and that's one they currently have on their roster. The Jags and Blake Bortles have agreed to a 3-year deal worth $54 million, $26.5 million guaranteed, that according to Adam Schefter. Bortles already was set to make $19 million this year as part of his 5th-year option, but now he's there through 2020.
Didn't he have the most fortunate injury ever? Like, apparently, they couldn't release him because he got hurt and his threat of surgery, and he wouldn't be able to pass a physical so he could be released. So he's parlayed that into a new contract. Well done.
Or, just like DeMarcus Lawrence, well done performing well in a quote-unquote contract year.
He didn't perform well.
He took him to an AFC championship.
No, he didn't. He didn't get in the way of them.
He was the quarterback. He was there.
He did not take them there. The defense did. He was along for the ride.
He didn't mess up the ride.
He did. He just didn't mess it up enough to prevent them from getting to the AFC championship game. Quarterback for Case Keenum or Blake Bortles. Who would you rather give that contract to?
Case Keenum.
Yeah, exactly.
I would not doing it willingly. This would be like you'd be forcing me. I would take neither of them.
So you don't need to sign into a 3-year, $54 million contract. And again, NFL contracts still to be determined as to what the structure is and will they be allowed to release him after 1 year, probably, because that's how it seems like all the NFL contracts are. March Madness begins on Sports Radio The Ticket Wednesday, March 14th, with the First Four. Tune in to Sports Radio 1350 AM and 93.1 FM for all the March Madness NCAA tournament games. And play our bracket contest starting Sunday, March 11th at KTIK.com. March Madness is coming to Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM The Ticket. Up next, quick hits, including what is the line between clumsiness and dirtiness. That's next on Sports Radio, The Ticket.
Quick Hits with Bob and Chris. Topic number one.
Bob decided that San Diego was a nicer place to be in late February than Boise, Idaho.
Can you blame him?
Yeah, I can.
It's snowing outside. Well, it was snowing. There's snow on the ground.
As somebody who is the biggest fan of warm weather and not snow, yeah, I think Bob maybe made a good decision. Or he has a game to call tomorrow, one or the other. So no Bob, instead it's Fish. And Fish, we know about the FBI, but what feel-good story came out of college basketball this weekend?
Well, it came out of Iowa. Iowa's taking on Northwestern, both teams struggling at the Big Ten. However, Jordan Bohannon of Iowa had 34 consecutive free throws. That's a school record, tied with Chris Street. Bohannon decided to intentionally miss the field goal to remain tied with Street, because Street, unfortunately, never got a chance to extend his record after he made his 34 consecutive free throw back in 1993. He left a team dinner the night after the game, was struck and killed in an automobile accident, so Bohannon decided, I don't want to erase his name from the books. They're both local Iowa kids, so now they'll be forever tied, at least for now, as most consecutive free throws made in Iowa Hawkeyes history.
That's a great story. That really is. Now, again, if to be the cynic here, what would happen if, like, you know, close game, second half?
They were
half.
Only up eight.
Yeah, close game, second half, under 2 minutes to go.
I mean, but you're 12th in the Big Ten. Like, what's the worst that could happen? You finish 13th?
Fair. I understand your point. I
mean, maybe if you were Michigan
coaches
State.
Coaches want to win, typically.
I mean, if you were Michigan State, yeah, but I mean, come on. Sentimental value means more than a basketball game.
I got you. It does. So good job on his part.
Topic number two.
All right, Chris, what do you make of the latest Zaza Pachulia episode?
All right, he fell on the leg of Russell Westbrook. Now, depending on the video and your perspective of it, he either intentionally landed on the legs of Russell Westbrook in the game on Saturday between Oklahoma City and Golden State. They kind of have, you know, a little bit of a thing. One of those players, Kevin Durant, ever heard of him? Yeah, he went from one of those teams, Oklahoma City.
I thought
City.
He was a Kevin Cupcake?
Nah, his real last name is Durant.
Oh, okay.
I know. You probably heard that in Oklahoma City the last time you were there. When was the last time you were in Oklahoma City?
It's been a few years.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So, so Zaza Pachulia fell on his leg. Now, either one of your perspectives is it was on purpose. The other one was that, you know, Nick Young, who was one of the teammates, kind of hooked the back of the leg of Pachulia, and that's what caused Zaza to fall, and just so happened to be right on the leg of Westbrook. Now, the thing about Zaza, you could say that this is a really random, fluky thing, but it just seems to always happen with Zaza Pachulia. Remember last year's playoffs, Kawhi Leonard. He stepped under him, and Kawhi Leonard all of a sudden hasn't really been the same. It's now 50 games into this year, and he's still injured. Of course, not the same injury that knocked him out of the playoffs last year and allowed Golden State to win that series against San Antonio. Zaza, of course, injured Kevin Durant, his own teammate, last season when he landed under Durant when he was going for a rebound in Washington. And there's been other instances, whether he's been a member of the Bulls, whether it's been a member of the Bucks, where there's videos out there of him getting into tussles with other players. And there's always the perspective of, okay, he's just a clumsy dude. He's a clumsy seven-footer who's always in traffic with a lot of other bodies around him. But at what point does your clumsiness become dirtiness? Like, he might not be a dirty player, but he's extremely clumsy. But if his clumsiness keeps endangering other players on the floor and making them upset, willing to fight, then does it even matter what the intent is? Like, you almost have to protect players from themselves and say Zaza Pachulia should be suspended a little bit based on he can't contain his body within traffic. He needs to get better at it. But then there's the opposite perspective of it, and I think I'm more on this line of thinking. People said the Warriors weren't tough, right? There was a couple of years ago when they were out here shooting threes, winning championships, doing that, but the argument was they weren't tough. Now all of a sudden people are saying they're too tough. Draymond Green is too cheap and too dirty, and Zaza Pachulia is too dirty. Yeah, you can't have it both ways. You can't criticize them for being the finesse team that shoots a bunch of threes and then critique them for being too physical at the same time. So I am on the line of stop being hypocritical when it's the Golden State Warriors. If you don't like them, just say you don't like them, but stop trying to come up with your own rationale to fit your narrative.
I will say I saw the video. That looked intentional. It looked like he's like, oh, hey, that's Russ Westbrook on the ground. I'm going to fall over. And it looked intentional. That's all I'll say.
Topic number three.
What was the worst fantasy football news today?
Well, Chris, there's a certain running back who plays in the NFL who scored 19 total touchdowns over the last 2 years, which is not too bad value as a fantasy football player. No Unfortunately, doubt. He's stuck as a backup. I'm talking about Tevin Coleman of the Atlanta Falcons. And today, the Falcons announced they had no plans to trade him. Meaning, if you want to plan on drafting Devontae Foreman in your league, you also have to draft Tevin Coleman, because Tevin Coleman's going to steal some of your touchdowns, and he's also a great backup to have if Freeman gets hurt, which happens a lot. So, the worst news, Tevin Coleman isn't a starting running back somewhere.
Yeah, the NFL doesn't have enough good backs to have somebody
two of
this good behind Freeman.
Coleman's the second running back behind Ingram or Kamara, whoever you want to call the starter, as a guy who you can start when you're short on a bye week as a backup and still probably get 10 points.
The Saints were the most unique backfield situation where I never before had seen two top five running backs in the same backfield. That just doesn't happen. So,
Get used to it, Chris. Get used
to it. You can take that and really go to the bank with the fact that you had two top five fantasy running backs.
We will have one and two next year. Mark it down.
Topic number four.
All right, Chris, what is the most striking thing about the NBA standings?
All right, you could make the case that the race for the number one seed in the West, that is what's striking to you, and the Warriors battling with the Rockets. Okay, you know, that's an interesting one. I still think the Warriors are the better team in that one, but they're really close, neck and neck. All right, how about the playoff race in the West? I mean, teams number 10 all the way up to number 3 are separated by, like, two games, and your Pelicans are in that mix. Yeah, that's kind of fun. The Eastern Conference, very similar. You know, 3 through 8 in the Eastern Conference within just a handful of games of each other. Those are all fun storylines. However, the top storyline right now when you look at the standings is the bottom part of it. Every team at the bottom of the standings, let me count them, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. The bottom 9 teams are all in losing streaks.
Haven't they lost like 44 games in a row?
That's where I was going next. If you add up the losing streaks of the bottom 9 teams, it adds up to 44. That's right. The bottom 9 teams have lost the last 44 games that they've played. I don't think they're putting out the most ideal lineups for them to win those games.
They're focusing on player development, Chris.
They should be, because they're not making the playoffs. But the thing is, y'all made the Sixers get rid of Sam Hinkie for doing the same thing that V-Squads are doing, almost even more blatantly.
Is that why you were looking at the bottom of the standings, because you're used to looking down there this time of year?
I mean, the Lakers, they're out here gaining ground on all these teams as being the 10th worst team. The Sixers have their draft pick. That's why I'm looking at the bottom of the standings. All right, up next, change in the playoffs discussion concludes with the sport whose playoffs have been debated the most. That's next on Sports Radio, The Ticket. The college football playoff has been the playoff system that has been debated the most. The most. It's not even close over the last 10 years, especially over the last 4-2 with the addition of the college football playoff, with the 4-team playoff entering the fold. But is it exactly the most broken playoff? I'd make the case that it's not. Bob is out. He's at San Diego, or at least on the way there, before he enjoys the warm weather and then the game tomorrow. Michael Fisher has been one who has been all over the place when it comes to what he thinks of the college football playoff. I feel like every time I talk to you about it, you have a different opinion of it. But with us going through over the past week the different playoff systems throughout sports, and it started with the NBA with Adam Silver talking about changing the way the NBA playoffs are done, we've taken a look at pretty much every other sport except college football, seeming the most debated for last. And you're probably the biggest example of being swayed by whatever public opinion
is. That is not true.
Yeah, you're all over the place. You're all over the map when it comes to what you think of the college football playoff.
I like the college football playoff. I've never not liked the college. I don't like the people who run the college football playoff. I've even blogged about how irrational their decisions are, but I like the format. I like the format, Chris. It's the determination of who gets into the format that I have the biggest issue with.
So do we – this is where I want to start the discussion. We have 4 years of the playoff, right? 2014, mm-hmm. Alabama against Ohio State, Oregon against Florida State, the Jameis Winston versus Marcus Mariota game. 2015, Clemson and Oklahoma, Alabama against Michigan State. We were complaining about those semifinals not really being really good games after the fact. 2016 was Alabama-Washington, Clemson and Ohio State. And then most recent year, Clemson and Alabama and Oklahoma State and Georgia. And the Oklahoma State-Georgia game, of course, being Oklahoma-Georgia game being a classic and the championship game being a very compelling one as well from last year. 4 years. Do we have enough of a sample size to make any conclusion on the college football playoff? It's only been 4 years. In the grand scheme of things, 4 years is not that many years.
No, I would say until last year, we did. The first 3 years, we had to say, okay, four is a perfect number. We don't really need more than four. And now, we have when we had a team that went undefeated that missed it, now is when we're saying, well, should we only keep it at four? So I would say until this year, it looked really good. It looked great on paper until 2017 when you had a team go undefeated and miss out.
Well, that goes to show you the sample size wasn't big enough after three years.
So no, then the sample size is not big enough. No.
So it's not big enough after 4 years either. Not a great, like, what happened last year was rough. Ohio State firmly believes that they had a playoff-worthy resume, right?
Yeah.
Even though they had that bad loss, it was to Iowa. They still believe that they had a college football playoff resume. They didn't get in. UCF won all their games. When you win all your games, I feel like you have a right to be like, yeah, we should have been in that thing. And those are two teams on the outside looking in. However, from the college football fans' perspective, and I know Boise State hopes to one day be in the discussion for being undefeated and hopefully having a claim to be in this thing. But I see the like four right now more than a lot of people do. Now, the easy thing is to say, all right, let's go to eight and include all the conference championship winners, the group of five champ, right, and then two wild card teams.
Yeah, but the wild card team, I don't like eight. I like four because any other number besides four, you get messy.
Okay, what is your concern with eight?
Eight, well, basically you just put it in two teams that most likely played in conference championship games and lost outside of Notre Dame. So you're rewarding a team that's coming off a loss as opposed to maybe, what if we have two group of five teams that go 13-0? Do you think a second 13-0 group and five team, if Boise State and UCF both go undefeated, you think that second team's going to get in over an Alabama that lost an SEC title game?
Well, you're talking about rewarding a loss. We rewarded a loss last year with Alabama to the point where they didn't even play their conference championship game because they lost and we rewarded them.
Yeah, that's the problem. And then the other thing I have is then you get into seeding teams based off of, well, do we want to seed for 1-8 best teams or do we want to seed so we avoid rematches? And I don't want to see them seeding to avoid rematches, but I don't want to see rematches in the playoffs. No one liked Alabama LSU in the BCS National Championship game.
But people, well, I guess
Alabama Georgia didn't play this year.
Yeah. That was not a rematch.
And Clemson, Alabama, it's a playoff rematch from a year before, so it's different than as if they had played earlier in that year. I don't want to see rematches in my playoffs unless it's a championship game in college football.
So how do you get around this?
You keep it at four.
But I see on this, you have an ideal way that
I have the idea. Well, there's been a couple times when we've been changing where people have said, well, this is the it would never happen, but this is the ideal way. And I've come up with the supreme ideal way to fix college football as a whole.
All right, I need to hear this.
Well, one, we'd have to go to six teams because we're rewarding conference championships. And I know I said I didn't like six teams, and we need to make sure we reward everyone. So every conference champ is in. I don't care if you go somehow 8-5 and win the Pac-12, you're in. Plus the group of five champion. How do we determine the group of five champion? All the group of five teams. They'll have their own tournament. The six conference champions will have their own tournament to determine the champion of the group of five.
How many games are they playing?
This is ideal. I don't care about how many games. This is ideal. No FCS schools if you're in the group of five. How about that, Chris? That would probably make it enough.
Okay.
Then the group of five champion, regardless of how they do in the playoff, replaces the worst regional team in the Power Five. So say Boise State makes this 16 playoff. They lose in the first round. They replace Colorado in the Pac-12. Sorry, Colorado, you're the worst team in the Pac-12. Boise State's in.
You have a relegation system.
Yeah, you got to win your way back. And then any Power 5 school that goes winless in conference is also demoted for the best regional group of 5 school.
The relegation system. You brought that
into
I'm bringing the relegation system in. Okay, I can rock with that.
Because people would say, well, you made two championship games, you separated the Power Five and the Group of Five, but there's a way to move. If you can win all of your games, you get to move up and you're rewarded.
You're right on this. Never will ever happen.
No, it will never happen because of money and travel, but it'd be the best way to fix it.
We've discussed this before in the past about the relegation system. Whenever soccer gets into the discussion, we somehow like transform it. What if the other sports that we typically consume, what if it had the soccer system? And the thing that always made the most sense was college football. And this is ultimate thinking outside the box with it. But I'd be down. I'd definitely be down for it. Now, the 16 playoff, what advantage is the 16 playoff just getting you the group of five team in it and making more people happy?
And it rewards conference champions.
So Alabama would not be and they won the championship last year.
Yeah, but they shouldn't have been there to begin with. Because we've talked about how fluky the committee's logic was. Well, Alabama and Ohio State are really close, and then Ohio State wins a conference championship, and they weren't close enough to take conference championships in, which it seems kind of flaky how they determine things.
It was off. It was. Four teams leaves you the room for debate, though. And while, in a way, you want to have the debate solved, right? You want to have all the worthy teams being in and somehow keep all the unworthy teams out, although I don't know what number that you can get for a playoff to consistently get the teams that aren't worthy out and the teams that are worthy in. But I like the debate aspect of it. And I think that's part of the lifeblood of college football.
I like four if the committee made sense.
And how can you be assured that they make sense?
That's the question. I mean, because if you put
You need to be the committee, and that's
yes,
it.
Yes, I do. I do need to be the committee. But the problem is if you wait conference championships, there's no debate as of, well, who's better, the Big Ten champ or the Pac-12 champ?
So remove debate and just give it to the
conference. If you like debate, the way we do it now is perfect, except for the fact that the committee just lies to your face.
That's the whole thing. They do lie. But the debate about my conference is better than your conference, the SEC is better than the Pac-12, my one loss is worse than your one loss. What would college football be without that?
No, I think we need to debate. Here's what you do, Chris. If you want to keep the debate, get rid of preseason rankings. Which I know is part of the debate, but then it prevents LSU was number four to start the year. We beat them when they were number four, and then they finish 6-6. So do we get credit for the 6-6 win or the number four win?
The problem with that is I like early season storylines, and I like when
the SEC always beats 65 top 20 teams, because basically the preseason rankings are the SEC and then everyone else. I'm pretty sure Vanderbilt gets a couple votes in the preseason coaches poll. Like, well, Vanderbilt, if you think about it, was number 35 to start the year, so that's a quality win for Alabama.
If you're upset that your team gets left out, there's really nothing to say for you. Well, at least there was a debate. Well, I'm guessing that doesn't make you feel any more comfortable. Like, if that's the one thing about Ohio State fans, I say, hey, there is a debate about you, 4-5. Ohio State fans aren't feeling better about themselves because the playoff system allowed us to debate it. So I do see your reasoning of having the conference champions make sure they're guaranteed to get in, and then a group of five champion, except the group of five would have to play like 18 games in the regular season.
If you just get rid of FCS games, you're fine. Or you separate the leagues. If the group of five never played the Power Five, get right into conference season. Boom.
Up next. All right. So everybody was paying attention to this Tiger Woods guy, right? I saw an example of why golf is the softest sport in the world. Talk about that next on Sports Radio, The Ticket. All right, I got golf takes, y'all. Yeah, I watched some golf. I did. So I got golf takes. There was some college basketball on, and I was locked into that, and then some NBA. But I caught enough of the golf to get some takes. And I'm not the traditional golf guy at this station. Michael Fisher, you're not the traditional golf guy. You like to golf, though, right?
I do enjoy to get out and golf.
But you don't exactly, like,
the
PGA.
I watch the four majors, and that's about it.
Yeah, you're not up on that game. JP just doesn't want to be associated with us, so he's not going to come in. So Mike Prater, who gets to hear JP talk about golf all the time.
JP and I always like to battle who's the smartest golf guy in the room. It's probably JP, but I like to think that I can push his buttons a little bit.
Gotcha. So I'm going to try to push your buttons as being the more traditional golf guy and give you my observations from what I saw at this tournament. What was it, in Alabama?
It was in Florida.
Oh, Florida. Okay.
The Honda Classic was in Florida.
That SEC area of the country, okay?
Yep.
All right. Justin Thomas, he's the dude who won this thing, right? Young dude.
Yes, sir.
he should be thanking Tiger Woods for distracting from the fact that he is the softest professional athlete of all time.
I couldn't agree with you more.
Okay, because what happened over the weekend there with Justin Thomas? Now, he won the thing, so I guess congratulations. And he dropped an F-bomb right after winning it. That thing went in the cup, and he goes and goes, bleep yeah, about it. And I don't really mind that. Good for him. He won the tournament. People get excited when they win something. If we made it a big deal when somebody swears after they do something well, we would have a lot of outrage throughout sports. I don't really use that kind of language, but I don't understand our country's fascination with shaming people publicly who do. So I don't really he made the putt, and I have a complaint about him that I'll get to in a second. The F-bomb is getting a lot of attention. I don't really care.
I really don't care either, but as a professional athlete, you probably need to act like you've been there before, and I think as a professional athlete, you do carry a small amount of responsibility. I think, you know, the where we are in society right now, a swear word, I don't care when, where, why, or how it comes out, it is not that big a deal. You're 1,000% right there. But if I'm his mom, if I'm his agent, if I'm his handlers, I'm saying, maybe tone it down a little bit. It wasn't the best of look. I'm glad you got excited. I'm glad you're fired up. Nobody's really too worried about it, but it just wasn't a good look. My biggest issue was, and again, it wasn't that big a deal because we're talking about swearing, which isn't that much of an issue in this day and age. CBS aired it two more times in the next 3 minutes and never even bleeped it out. They just showed the highlights again and let it go. Now, back in the day, we used to, when we heard that word, somebody would apologize, and then we would scratch all the video and all the audio.
So you're not sorry. you captured the emotion of the moment.
That is
stop trying to act like you didn't want to do that. You wanted to capture the emotion of the moment. It's the same thing in basketball when they have the mics by the rim.
Sure.
And sometimes when somebody's grabbing a rebound, they block a shot, you'll hear, give me that bleep.
Yeah.
And they sometimes even cut the audio out if it's an ABC game. And it's like, you don't need to do that. Come on, bro. I don't care. There might be kids that are watching, and they might hear that word too. Oh, well, they hear it.
I'm not too worried about that anymore. And so obviously, CBS wasn't worried about it because they
let it go
twice.
Go
they didn't
them.
Even bleep it out. So they let it go. So I guess we're to the point now where just F-bombs on TV are okay, which I guess I'm okay with. I'm not too worried about that one.
I hear much worse around here sometimes.
I compared it to, because I saw it. I saw it live. And I compared it to Shaun White when he won the gold medal and got ripped up a little bit for dragging the flag on the ground. He got caught up in the emotions, probably shouldn't have done it. Somebody probably should have told him, take care of business. But at the end of the day, it's not that big a deal.
All right. But the real problem of what happened
yesterday
is what happened after one of these tee shots by Justin Thomas. All right. So the rule in golf, and Fish, again, is a golfer, you can feel free to chime in on this, but it's to be quiet as the fans, to be quiet during the swing. You're not supposed to make any noise during the swing or when they're lining up and examining what's about to go down. It seems a little bit unnecessary to me because most professional athletes have to, you know, perform with noise. That's part of the requirements of the job. But that's a thing in golf, so I understand that.
I don't think it's the noise. It's the sudden interruption. Like if you go to the Phoenix Open where the noise is constant, you'll see the pros go to the 16th hole where it's very, very loud and ask the fans to raise their hands. If a jet flies over, it's not going to scare you as a golfer. If an M80 bomb goes off across the street, that's going to scare the living crap out of you. If this crowd is yelling in unison, no worries. If one guy yells "F you," we got problems.
Okay, I see. So one lunatic within the crowd. I get it. I understand why. Does again seem a little bit over the top, but it's there. It's within the culture. After the swing, though, it's cool for the fans to make noise, right? They're allowed to yell, scream, get in the hole like they always do. That's fine, correct? I'm not crazy with
this. Nope, you the man. You're not the man. You can yell whatever you want.
Perfect. So that's cool. Now, yesterday, a fan yelled after the Justin Thomas swing, not during it, but after when the ball's in the air, get in the bunker. You know, apparently he wasn't rooting for Justin Thomas there because the ball going into the bunker is not a good thing.
No.
Justin Thomas freaked out on him and had him removed. This is him. I know it's hard to hear. He's in the background of the commentary, but this is Justin Thomas on that hole.
There we go. Absolutely perfect.
Again, ball to
run. Nailed that thing.
All right, so to kind of clear it up, he said, who said that? Who was cheering for the ball to get into the bunker? Was that you? You're done, buddy. You're gone. He had the guy removed from the event for rooting against him. You can't be rooted against in golf.
I thought
you can't be cheered against.
I thought
everyone around you has to support you.
No, that is soft.
That is soft. And he's the most soft athlete I've ever seen. He got him removed for rooting against him. It wasn't breaking any of the rules that distract him on his swing. He was just cheering against him. You can't be rooted against. That's ridiculous. That's soft.
It's very soft. And shame on Justin Thomas. Shame on the PGA. Shame on the Honda Classic people for doing it. I'm assuming, I never saw a follow-up. I'm assuming they escorted the guy out. They talked about it in the press conference where I thought Justin Thomas was funny because he said, well, the guy's been harassing me for a couple of holes. That was his justification when the audio there tells me he had to find out who was saying that. So there was a little bit of hypercritical action going on there. Mm-hmm. There's no, Justin Thomas changed my perception of him on that 1 30-second clip. All of a sudden, I didn't like him because of that exact same reason. You can't do that. You can't do that. Look at a couple of holes later when that Luke List was, when he shanked a ball up against the fans. There, he's being surrounded by 30 drunken fans who are yelling at him and screaming at him. Now, they didn't scream at him before his swing, but he dealt with it like a pro, and he's a nobody. Justin Thomas is the player of the year. Justin Thomas won the last major. Justin Thomas is the hottest golfer on the planet right now, and he acted like a two-year-old.
Yeah. Fish, you're probably more balanced between me and Prater, so where are you on this?
I agree. I think he was an idiot.
Soft.
He basically opened him up. If I'm ever at a golf event, if I'm going to the Masters this year, which I don't have the money, I would go to every hole where he's at, and you'll get in the bunker because I know I can get in his head now.
I totally agree with that. He's opening himself up to criticism. He basically has a sign on his forehead now that says, make fun of me. And I think the PGA has to take a look at it. First of all, the player shouldn't be making that decision. The player could go over to a golf course administrator or steward or whatever and say, that guy over there is hassling me. Mm-hmm. But the player should not be, you're gone, have a nice day, you're out of here.
He was also a jerk about it. He was like, have a nice day, like all sarcastic and stuff. Like, what are you doing?
Totally agree.
Soft.
Totally
soft.
Agree.
You can't be that.
He's a rich, young punk.
All right. So Tiger Woods is not young anymore.
And he's rich, and he's somewhat of a punk, but I love the guy.
All right. So you, I love the guy category, and I will admit, dude got me into golf. Now, he's still out here trying to make this thing work, and he's still getting the attention. And from what I heard, four times the crowd is the leaders throughout this Honda Classic, which, hey, if you can get it, you can get it. But I will make this analogy. You cannot move on with your life if you're still checking for your ex. And at this point, the CBS and the golf networks, they're all up in the Instagram and the Facebook profile of an ex-girlfriend that isn't coming back when it comes to Tiger Woods. Now, I know he was okay this weekend, and it got people optimistic, and I saw his Masters odds all of a sudden shot up to where he's like, what, the sixth best favorite or the sixth favorite when it comes to the betting odds?
Yep.
Which, again, you're trying to hope for this thing to happen, but you cannot move on with your sport when your biggest story continues to be what used to be. You will not get younger fans on your bandwagon if your biggest story within your game and the way your coverage is completely based. Like SportsCenter, they had a segment of in their A block, their first segment of their show before the commercial about Tiger Woods. Down in C block, after a couple of commercial breaks, was what actually happened at the front end of the leaderboard and who actually won the thing.
I saw the Associated Press story I saw led with Tiger Woods over Justin Thomas.
And you, as a sport, and again, they can't control exactly what the networks want to cover. Like, the PGA can't really decide what ESPN deems interesting. But I will say, as somebody who is 26 years old, Fish, I don't want to speak for you, but you're in my same age bracket here.
I'm not.
As a sport, you are not going to get, and maybe golf doesn't care about hitting younger people, but I think every sport should be concerned at some level about getting younger fans because older fans will get older.
Sure.
Younger fans will move right into that demographic of what golf wants. As a sport, you cannot move on if your biggest story is what used to be. That's kind of the problem baseball got into at some points, too, where your biggest appeal was what used to be. You can't do that anymore.
I think it works for golf, though. I think it really does work in this particular case because PGA golf right now has the best of both worlds. They have a healthy Tiger who is competitive. Let's see how long it lasts before he either gets hurt again or starts to fizzle out. And they'll still latch on to Tiger. There's no doubt about that. But they also have the young guns. They have Justin Thomas. They have Ricky Fowler. They have Jordan Spieth. They have Rory McIlroy. They have the young guns that can move it forward. Everybody said when Tiger Woods flames out of golf, and by all accounts, he's started that for a while. Maybe he gets a little bit of a second wind back. But as soon as golf has to go through that, they're in trouble. But those four or five or six young guns came in and really saved it. So you do have a really strong foundation of young players that will carry the sport for the next 10 to 12 years. Plus, you got this cute little romantic side story of Tiger Woods trying to rebuild
but
his career.
But he's not the side piece. It's one thing if you make him the side piece. Like, he's not. He's clearly the wife in this situation. He's not the side piece. It's one thing if he was covered like the side piece. He's not the side piece when it comes to golf right now.
But we're talking about two different things. The media treats him as story number one. There's no doubt about that. That's a media issue. PGA golf is in great shape with the young guns and Tiger Woods and the best of both worlds.
So how could they get promoted? How can the young five, young six that you mentioned become the wife and not the side piece?
Keep being competitive. Keep winning. I mean, it's not going to be Justin Thomas. Justin Thomas, even though, like I said, he is the reigning player of the year. He's the last golfer to win a major. He's the hottest golfer in the planet right now. He has zero personality. He doesn't resonate with anybody. Ricky Fowler. If Ricky Fowler wins it yesterday, he's the star. If Jordan Spieth wins it, he's the star. If Rory McIlroy wins it yesterday, he's the star. It can't be Justin Thomas, even before yesterday's shenanigans. There are three or four young stars that can carry this and put Tiger Woods into the number two position.
Soft, Justin Thomas.
Soft.
Can't get over it. Soft.
We will agree with that one.
Kaiser Prater, Bob, and I will be hitting up the Hard Rock in Vegas. You should, too, for the Mountain West Basketball Tournament. Follow the Broncos men's and women's teams. Enjoy live radio shows Wednesday through Friday. Stay with the teams and the fans at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino. Book your room at KTIK.com for a special package rate and attend Idaho Sports Talk Thursday to win a three-day, two-night stay. King, Barrios, and Bow Investment Group present Kays and Prater, Bob, and I from the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Vegas, March 7th through the 10th. Travel with the ticket. Up next, sports update, including which team no longer has plans to acquire the services of Kirk Cousins. That's next on Sports Radio, The Ticket.
So the Ticket sports update with a little programming note about Boise State. It was announced today that Boise State and Learfield have extended their coverage contract through 2025, meaning that football, men's, and women's basketball will all remain on their same stations here on Sports Radio Ticket and 670 KBOI, Chris. So no need to move that dial come football season or Tuesday for the next 7 years.
Yeah, there you go. More importantly, no need to break the habits.
No.
Promotion stays the same. Don't have to change the promotions whatsoever.
Speaking of Boise State basketball, they had their second bye of the Mountain West Conference season over the weekend. In the process, they still got the number two seed thanks to a loss to Fresno State. Broncos will travel to SDSU. That's where Bob is right now, up in the air, to play at the Aztecs tomorrow. Today, Coach Leon Rice was talking about the ongoing FBI probe that has named some teams and players illegally involved in coaching and recruiting. This is what he had to say about his thoughts on it and why it really impacts Boise State.
The most important thing. I mean, why do we have rules that some of us are going to really try to follow to the T and then others play by different rules? It's not right. And, you know, I think that there's a lot of coaches that feel that way. And, you know, so it's great. Let's make sure we're all on the same page and all playing by the same rules. And that would make it a lot better.
Now, I guess consumption of this story has led me to think more of outside of Arizona, which Sean Miller allegedly on the phone discussing the $100,000 about DeAndre Ayton. Most of what's going on in this specific story doesn't have to do with the colleges themselves, like the teams that themselves cheating, right? Like,
oh, yeah.
Most of this has to do with agents and shoe companies that are around the players getting involved in money exchanging hands, maybe or may not be. But really, it hasn't had much to do with coaches being a part of the illegal money transferring, allegedly. I want to keep saying that word. And it doesn't really have as much to do with boosters on this side of things, right? So, like, for Coach to come up with the fair point that he wants all these schools to be playing with the same set of rules. It's hard to say that schools for sure are unaware and have no knowledge of money that might be exchanging hands between the shoe companies and agents and boosters aren't involved. Like, you can't say that for sure. But from what we know evidence-wise of the reports for the Yahoo story and from ESPN outside of Sean Miller on the phone, I don't think schools being a part of it is at the front of the discussion.
Well, I think you're right. Maybe he's just saying, don't play with players. Play don't pay players. Of course, like you said, it's not the schools, but don't use players that are paid, Chris.
But
do your research. You got to do your homework.
What about this leads you to think that the schools knew about what was taking place?
From this investigation, I don't think you know. But unfortunately, as we've heard from the investigation, you could go to another agency and you'd hear the same thing. And maybe that agent would be in contact with the coach. We only have one coach.
So the schools should be launching FBI-level investigations on the players that they're recruiting.
Yes.
I mean, you kind of see why that's unrealistic.
Or maybe we could pay all the players, and then everyone's playing on the same rules. Whoever's got the most money can get a player. Isn't that how the MLB works? Whoever's got the most money gets to pay a guy.
Yeah,
they're all playing on the same rule.
But that's, again, I don't think Coach, from the answer that I just heard, would be against that. Like, he said that he just wants the same set of rules.
Yeah.
So if the rules were, well, Boise State has less money to spend, then I mean, I'm sure he would love that, but at least it's on the up and up.
You could at least say, well, okay, you know, school in the Washington got that player because they're Washington in the Pac-12. We're Boise State. That's why they got him.
I mean, yeah, like, as if to say, like, the best players don't go to the best schools anyway because of other reasons that have to do with exposure, money that's invested in the athletic department. Like, it already, for the people who are wondering, oh, the money's on an uneven playing field, as if,
no.
You guys see the playing fields even right now?
Most of the players that come out of small schools that are good, it's because they developed into good players like Chandler Hutchinson.
Indeed.
Well, going to the NFL now, it's just been announced today by the New York Times that it is expected that Roger Goodell will fine Jerry Jones, quote, millions of dollars as a result of Jerry Jones' public feud with the league last year over the Ezekiel Elliott suspension.
What did he do that was illegal, though?
Well, I don't think he did anything illegal. I'm pretty sure Roger Goodell is just going to fine him because he can. What did Ezekiel Elliott do that was illegal?
Well, Ezekiel Elliott out here, well, what did he get suspended for?
He was suspended for alleged domestic violence that took place while he was in college.
That would be illegal.
But he wasn't an NFL employee. And he was not found guilty in a court of law.
But the NFL has long had a standard of you don't have to be found guilty in a court of law.
In a court of law, Ezekiel Elliott did nothing illegal.
Yeah, I'm not willing to go with Ezekiel Elliott and Jerry Jones, put them in the same sentence of, well, they did nothing illegal. Jerry Jones has done nothing but talk. Ezekiel Elliott, allegedly, there was an investigation launched about domestic violence. Yes. Like, there's a complete difference there. For Roger Goodell to fine Jerry Jones, what is the basis of fining him? Fining him for
conduct detrimental to the league. Which, really, anything you do that Roger Goodell doesn't agree with can be conduct detrimental to the league.
Conduct detrimental to the league by saying that his best player should be still on the team is detrimental to the league? I would say suspending Ezekiel Elliott
was detrimental to the league.
Detrimental to the league if you think that there wasn't enough of a basis to suspend him for. This just seems like a power trip. And I would hope that he gets beyond petty power trips. But what is the evidence to say that Roger Goodell is beyond petty power trips?
When has Roger Goodell not been on a petty power trip?
Yeah.
Tom Brady was suspended. He didn't do anything illegal that we know of, Chris.
That was an ultimate petty power trip.
And also, according to this report, says Jones will be required to compensate the NFL for all of its legal fees.
Oh, no. Jerry Jones ain't going to let that happen.
Yeah,
trust.
So Jerry Jones...
Jerry Jones is too gangster to let that happen.
He will be fined millions of dollars. He will have to pay all the fees the competition committee incurred while defending itself.
That ain't happening.
And he also has to pay all of the legal fees the NFL got while defending itself.
Absolutely not. This is laughable. You really think Jerry Jones is, like, on the toilet reading this? He's just, like, cracking up, laughing.
I'm just saying, Roger Goodell, he is... Maybe Roger Goodell sees the writing on the wall that since he's feuding with probably the two most powerful owners in the NFL, Robert Kraft and Jerry Jones, he's going to be gone sooner than later, so he's just going all out.
No wonder Jerry Jones just didn't want Roger Goodell to be re-upped. This is just Roger Goodell stunting.
Power move, right?
Power trip.
Well... Going to the NBA, fans in Cleveland might want to find an alternative route to the Cavaliers games to help ease their mind on what could happen this summer. There's been three billboards that have popped up on the I-480 in Cleveland. They're trying to convince LeBron. Now, Chris, you might want to look at your bank account, see where you're spending money, because these billboards are trying to lure LeBron to Philadelphia. You have hashtag Philly wants LeBron. Hashtag 23 alongside four blue numbers that just so happen to match up with Embiid, Simmons, Sark, and Covington. And then the final one, hashtag finish the process.
It's funny, where was number 20 in there? That's the number one pick from...
Yeah, I don't think... I think they're still hoping he knows how to shoot, Chris.
The video this week I was more encouraging.
Was he outside the paint?
He was outside the paint a little bit, too.
How long?
I was taking those jumpers.
How far?
About 17 feet.
Is it jumpers that fish could make on a reliable basis?
I've never seen you play hoops. Can't answer that question.
I'm going to go with yes.
All right.
Until he's out...
He needs to get that form bad. Muscle memory needs to be rebuilt so he can shoot these long jumpers.
Should we be looking at your bank account, Chris Lewis?
I didn't spend the money on this. And I'm not disagreeing with how they spent their money, though.
I also think it's really funny. So it was the billboards were purchased by Power Home Remodeling. And the only reason to know this is that the company announced, well, we didn't want our name out there, but the billboards we bought, they were deemed political enough to where we had to have the words paid by putting on the billboards, which I don't know how do you think that's political? You're talking to LeBron James.
Because LeBron James is the mayor of Cleveland.
Pretty unofficially.
Much. Unofficial. Now, my thing with this is, how does Cleveland let this happen?
I mean,
like, how does Cleveland let this happen?
I'm sure it's just a national billboard company.
Why didn't anybody with Cleveland ties buy this billboard?
Because they didn't think about it. Shout out Philly for getting creative.
That's what's up. Philly clearly wants it more.
You know, you use Snapchat, right, Chris?
I do.
You know those geo filters you can use?
Yeah, I've heard of them.
Someone created a geofilter on Alabama that said UCF national champions.
See, it's smart. Some people want it more.
Exactly. You got to want it more. Clearly, Cleveland doesn't want LeBron. They just assume it.
Take him for granted, and all of a sudden he'll be wearing the red, white, and blue of Philadelphia 76ers with Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid, and the NBA wouldn't know what happened.
Also, I do disagree, though. I don't think Sam Hinkie, when he started the process, ever saw finishing the process would be getting LeBron.
No, absolutely it was. It was to have cap flexibility. It might not
LeBron,
be LeBron, but
LeBron
it would be that LeBron
level
player.
I thought he wanted to develop a team and then go from there and then pay all his
he
players.
He wanted to maintain draft assets, cap flexibility, and maneuverability. So now they have the ability to go get a star player who's unhappy via trade or sign a free agent or build a young team with all these high draft picks.
Right. As long as
that's how you build up a team.
Okay. I'll believe you, Chris. You're the process expert here.
Trust the process. Simple. Up next, what we've learned, including college basketball. The world continues to turn. What we learned over the weekend. That's next on Sports Radio, The Ticket.
It's time to find out what we learned on Idaho Sports Talk with a little bit of Bob before he flew off to San Diego State. Really, the San Diego. It's not a state. But that doesn't make sense. How come we get all the crap for Boise isn't a state?
You got that, Fresno State
Fresno,
taunting us about Boise not
Fresno
being a state.
Fresno State yelling, Boise's not a state. Fresno's not a state. San Jose's not a state. Get it together, Mountain West. But Bob's off to get ready to call the Boise State-San Diego State game tomorrow. Boise State men's, of course, already locked into the 2 seed. I believe on the women's side, Chris, they could be anywhere from 1 to 99.
Yeah, pretty much. Now, at this point, the most likely for the women are 2 and 3. There's still a chance that they can get the 1, but they need some help in the form of UNLV suffering an L, and then you go to a tie break, which is a little bit complicated. But 2 and 3, most likely. There is a big difference, though, between 2 and 3.
Don't they want to be the 4, though?
They've won the tournament the last 2 times they've been the 4. The last time they were the 3, I think they lost their first game. Might have been their second. I think it was their first game, though. They've been the type of team that if they win a game, they win the whole thing. But if they don't
say,
I mean,
maybe
game.
History's on your side. Maybe be a 4. Maybe there's some late season player development, as the NBA calls it.
Just all of a sudden play your least optimal.
Riley Hooper's going to be on the bench in clutch time.
I don't think that's what Coach Prestel wants to do. I could be wrong, but I don't think we want Riley Hooper on the bench when the game's about to be decided.
Well, we're going to go to Chris's new favorite sport. Can I say this, Chris? Golf. You're very passionate about golf today.
Yeah, got some takes.
That's where we'll start where we learned, because we learned that Justin Thomas, one of the soft, I believe Chris called him the softest player at sports. He kicked a guy out for yelling, get in the bunker, after the ball was in the air.
Yeah.
Not during his swing. And then after his round, which he ended up winning the whole tournament, this is what he had to say about why he got a fan kicked off the course for yelling at him.
On the tee, yeah. Well, we're walking up on the tee, and this guy, I don't know who he was talking to, but I sounds like it was me. He said something like, he's like, I hope you hit it in the water, like hit it in the water, something like that. So I, you know, I just kind of like looked back there. I didn't say anything. Just again, you know, I just feel like there's no place for that. And then I hit it and my ball's in the air and it's not, it's in the middle of the fairway and he's yelling for it to get in the bunker. So I was like, okay, I've had enough. So I just turned around and asked who it was and he didn't want to say anything now that I had actually acknowledged him. So he got to leave a couple holes early. I just, you know, I don't want to kick someone out just to kick them out. It's just, that's so inappropriate. You know, we're out here trying to win a golf tournament. This is, you know, I would have done it if he said it to Luke, just like Rory did to the guy that said something to me at LA. It's just, you know, just because you're standing behind the ropes doesn't mean that you can, you know, I don't care how much I dislike or whatever somebody, I'm never going to wish that kind of stuff upon them. So I felt it was inappropriate. So he got to go home.
Has he ever been to a sports game before?
This
is he a
dude
fan?
Is soft.
Is he a fan
this
of any
dude
team?
Is S-O-F-T, soft. You know, like Kobe Bryant said to Dwight Howard, soft. It's soft. Well, I almost need to hear that again to hear all the ridiculousness. I know it was long, but like this isn't like I'm mostly on player's side when it comes to interactions with fans because I know fans can say some pretty nasty things, personal things. He said there's no place in golf for rooting against him. Like, everybody has to support this dude.
They didn't yell, like, break a leg while the ball. He just said, get in the bunker. Has this man ever attended another sporting event? I'm assuming, Chris, if you've ever gone to a 76ers game and the opposing team shooting a free throw, you're yelling, brick it, right? Or
yes.
Some
point. Miss! Miss!
I think
miss.
He thinks that is as offensive as yelling, get in the bunker, I would assume.
He goes, there's no place in golf. If there is, then the whole sport is soft. What, you all have to be supported? Everybody in the crowd has to say, good job! And give the round of applause? You can't be rooted against? Oh my goodness, this dude is... He's the most soft athlete. I can't believe that he went out in the press conference and said that and thought that he was like laughing about it. I can't believe it, man.
I think we need to start a GoFundMe. Send Chris Lewis to the Masters to follow Justin Thomas.
Like, I'm not the kind of guy who needs to be rooting against athletes.
No,
like, that's not me. That's not my personality.
Get his head. Somebody needs to follow this guy around at the Masters and, you know, get in the bunker every single tee shot.
But, like, he might have wanted the guy he was paired with to win. In the back nine. That, like, that happens. Like, not everybody roots for Tiger Woods
I mean,
all the time.
He allegedly said if the guy said it to his playing partner, he would have also got him kicked off, which I don't believe in a heartbeat. He'd be like, oh, somebody's rooting for me.
Exactly. Because he's being supported. He's soft. I don't like Justin Thomas. I don't know that much about him. I hope, you know, he does things in the future to make me go back on his side because I root for greatness. But, man, soft. Caves. Please be on my side with this because he's in the studio right now getting ready for his show.
Well,
Justin,
you know,
Thomas
know,
is
I,
soft.
I don't know much about this guy other than some of the comments I've read from some people that follow Prater's Twitter feed that I know personally, that he's an arrogant person. They didn't like him before. This didn't help. And I don't know how many of us are out there trying to like him or dislike him. And this probably won't help his cause. I've not heard many people come out and say, oh, I just love what he did. I love all that. So I would say most people are learning. But, you know, Bubba Watson had a lot of rough patches in terms of some of the things that he did or said and turned on his caddy. And other people, you know, kind of overlooked that through time. So that's about all I know.
I would be all up for Justin Thomas me mugging the guy. The whole rest of the way, every time he hits a good shot, just looking straight at him like Reggie Miller and Spike Lee back in the 90s. Just me mug him every time you do something right. Because that's what I want from my athlete. If you're getting criticized, you have the fair opportunity to respond to it and be like, yeah, I'm the man. Look at me. I won the tournament despite you. But to get this dude removed... That's just soft. I can't believe he did that. And now he's bragging about it after the fact. But, hey, congratulations on getting the dub. Anyway, you guys got a show coming up from 3 to 6. What you guys got going on?
Well, we've certainly got a lot to say about the NCAA situation. I think the great development that our high schools and colleges do in producing the greatest basketball players in the world, and it's really not close. Even the greatest basketball players in the world realize at a young age they need to come to the United States to become one of the greatest basketball players in the world. Mm-hmm. And so if the money changers aren't happy, which is the colleges, the sneakers, the agents, the NCAA, everybody with their hand out, They'll try to mess around with the rules, but I think the net result will be there. The United States produces the best basketball players in the world, and so I don't think that's changing anytime soon. So if we want to talk about money, great. If they don't, they can leave it alone. They could change it. I don't think it makes much difference.
Yeah, I mean, you just look at even the international players that are at the next level or at college basketball. I mean, they are coming from overseas but now going to these prep academies. And, you know, the things in Florida has, like, a bunch of prep schools where they have a lot of the international guys. So I see where it's coming from, but I do think the current system that's in place right now, if there's this much quote-unquote corruption, if you call that paying players, you really have to examine the way you're going about it. Gays and Prater coming up from 3 until 6. I'm sure they'll have an Olympic recap, too. I heard Prater talking about that a little bit in the office today. All right, so Bob Beeler tomorrow will give us a preview of the San Diego State game, now that the Broncos most likely the 2 seed. What should you be watching that game for? We discuss that and more tomorrow, 1 to 3, Sports Radio, The Ticket.
Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket.